despite the fact that I've worked continuously at the university for over 6 years, I was actually not wholly surprised when I received notification that the university would not be offering me conversion. What did surprise me, though, was the rather tactless placeholder note that was included as a reason for my non-conversion, a rather evocative and mysterious reason placed between angular triangular brackets. Same. Scores of casuals across the university in both academic and professional roles received this particularly callous notice. But nearly all of us received some other form of careless or bureaucratic notification from the uni that week. I was recently quoted in The Guardian describing my experience of receiving that email, that it made me feel like, quote, a loser. Mum and Dad are definitely printing and framing that article. But seriously, everybody here will be familiar with the wide-reaching impacts of long-term casual employment and casual exploitation on your self-esteem, your ability to plan and look forward to your future, on your health, your family, indeed every single aspect of your life. University staff and the wider community have been rightly outraged by what's now been dubbed ReasonGate. The university's carelessness, disregard, and disrespect for its casual staff seems to be a bottomless pit. On the other hand, what's made me feel really cool and popular was the show of solidarity amongst the almost 350 people who signed the open letter written by a group of casual activists that included myself in response to the Reason bungling. Our letter was directed not at the random idiot who sent the email, not at the HR department, but at our Vice Chancellor, Duncan Maskell. It is Duncan, after all, who runs the joint. And so it's Duncan who must be held to account for the appalling treatment of casual staff at the University of Melbourne. And this is why we're here today. So Duncan, knock knock, if you're home, if you're listening, here's my message to you. The fair and ethical treatment of casual staff at this university rests on your shoulders. You have the discretionary power to lead the tertiary sector away from rampant casualisation. You must act to create realistic pathways to secure work and career progression. You must put an end to the business model that fundamentally relies on casual wage theft, misclassification of casual duties, and disregard for casual staff qualifications and experience. You have a moral obligation to meet with us, your casual staff. Duncan, this is our second visit to your mansion and we are getting comfortable. We will not stop fighting for our rights and we plan to win.
In the open letter that started this off, the reason we're here, we had four demands we've gave to Duncan. We sent it to him in the letter. We told him about it when we bumped into him outside the Clyde. He hasn't agreed to any of them. We're asking for 200 new early career fellowships to give early career academics a pathway into secure teaching and research work so they don't have to go overseas, so they can have security in their lives. We're asking for them to convert eligible staff to secure forms of work. Like I said before, 70% of staff at the University of Melbourne are on insecure contracts. This is terrible. This isn't a kind of casual workforce supplementing secure work. They've got it upside down. We're asking them to reverse the 15% pay cuts for doctorate qualified staff. 1 year after we caught Melbourne Uni out for wage theft, after they agreed to pay us back millions and millions of dollars, they just found a new way to steal money from us. And last of all, right, the one you'd think would be the easiest for Duncan, we asked him to organise a meeting with all casuals. He's refused. When we bumped to him outside the pub, again, he refused. That was pretty easy. He tried to run away a bit. There were 10 of us. We have long legs. He couldn't make it. Still, the last message we heard, he was contemplating our demands. So we made it really easy for him to come meet us. We're here, Duncan. If you're there, he's got the blinds down.
Now, before I hand it over to our next speaker, and I want everyone to be patient with this one. Yeah, so I'm not sure it's going to work, but I've got some hopes for it. Who paid for your stupid castle? Duncan Maskell, you dirty rascal. Who paid for your stupid castle? Who paid for your stupid castle? Who paid for your stupid castle? Thanks so much for your patience with that one.
Hello everyone, I am a continuing staff member in the Creative Writing Program. Have spent my 20s and 30s teaching sessionally at different universities across Melbourne, 2 decades of my life. I'm here to express my deepest solidarity on behalf of the continuing staff for the Casuals Network, for this union, for the ongoing fight. We see you. As a continuing staff member, I want you to know that so many of us are not prepared to look away and hide out. We see you. We see what is being done to you. We see the class system the university has been trying to entrench for so long, pitting us against each other. We see the new painful language hiding the same ugly reality underneath it. We see that there is no secure, dignified employment on offer for you anywhere in sight, whatever the apologies. We don't believe in those apologies. My solidarity is filled with rage because wage theft and career theft are at the very heart of this university treatment of you. Not unfortunate byproducts, they are at the very centre of policies, procedures, calculations and decisions made, including now in the name of quote-unquote de-casualisation, which is the latest ugly, cynical thing of conversion that I want to talk about. Despite the epic victory of the wage theft campaign, and this victory is absolutely epic. Sorry, I'm not pausing when, you know, I'm just going to keep going. I don't have the music of it yet, but just shout on top of me. Oh, thank you so much. A little bit of encouragement, yes. The university is using the language of de-casualization to continue institutionalizing and invisibilizing theft, wage theft and career theft. Thanks. Sorry, my hands are shaking. The new anti-precarity conversion measures, which are designed to provide quote-unquote stability and quote-unquote certainty to the long-term sessional staff through the conversion, through the creation of teaching periodical positions, is the continuation of wage theft by another name. As you know, only a tiny number of casual academics have been offered these positions, but it's worse than that. Within these positions, the crucial gains achieved by the union on behalf of casuals are being rolled back, are being undone. But it's even worse than that. These positions steal research, writing, thinking, and connecting time and leave people financially stranded in the non-teaching periods. The stability these positions are supposed to offer is a lie. The certainty is a lie. These positions are worse than dead ends. And yet those who have just completed their first year, and some of them are my close friends, in these two-year roles, I've been told that they are exceptionally lucky or so blessed, must feel to be so grateful to be the chosen ones. Yay! So many others would have given everything to be in your place, they're told. There is a queue. You're meant to feel the breath of the eager others on your neck. I am ashamed that this rhetoric is being used in 2021 at this university. I'm ashamed because every time a casual colleague of mine has spoken out or pushed back on their treatment, they have been treated as ungrateful and ungracious. The toxic paternalism of this, the way casuals are divided into the grateful ones and the ungrateful ones, the compliant overworkers and the shit stirrers, is shameful. The deserving and undeserving poor, the good and bad refugees, the compliant and angry First Nation academics, there is a history to these kinds of insidious, ugly divisions, and this history is shameful. Shame! When my friends in TPA roles and teaching periodical roles have spoken out against the insanity of their workloads, they have been told to work on their time management skills. Learn to do it faster. Learn to manage your time better. It's all part of, you know, getting better at your job. 3 hours for 1 hour lecture preparation. Yes, so what's your problem? Yeah. On what planet can a 1 hour lecture, in many cases for completely new subjects, be written in 3 hours and not be the biggest pile of shit ever? How many people who come up with these calculations and these hours have never taught and have no idea what it takes to walk into the classroom and be ready. And those in the upper echelons who once taught haven't taught in so long they wouldn't know a student if they fell on their head. They certainly have no idea what it takes to teach and what it takes to teach in the global pandemic. In the last 2 years, you, our sessional colleagues, literally held this university together. You held it on your shoulders. We know that. We absolutely know that for a fact. When the university completely fell apart and was on its back like a giant, flailing, fighting behemoth. I'm just... hang on. Trying to take control of my notes. When this university could only send endless emails feigning frantic activity because they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. When this university disgraced itself again and again in front of our international students, you made this university make sense to our students, local and international. You made this university a place of refuge and community and safety and intellectual engagement and, most importantly, dignity. The indignity of asking sessional teachers and teaching periodicals to choose between letting themselves be exploited or doing a shit job that devalues them as teachers and scholars and devalues students who are being given crap and told it is an exclusive Melbourne Uni lollipop. My solidarity is filled with shame for the way in which this university thinks it's okay to tell you a week or so before the start of the semester whether you have jobs or not in the coming semester. The indignity of that, people with families and responsibilities and financial burdens and professional and creative lives much richer than the professional creative lives of people who make those decisions, are supposed to stay suspended, hanging on, waiting to see if the crumbs will fall from the master's table. As a continuing staff member, I'm here to tell you that we will not choose our little bits of security over your secure employment, over justice, over dignity, over the future of this university. You are this university. Without you, this university is a bunch of managers and salespeople who might as well be running a giant car yard. Thank you.
And now, last on our last speakers list, we have Nick Robinson, co-convener of the Melbourne Uni Casuals Network, and also fresh from National Council. Coming up, Nick.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming. It's good to be here. It's funny looking at this mansion. It's like every time I walk down this street and I look at it, I'm probably not thinking what most people are thinking when they see a behemoth like that. I'm thinking about union wins. I'm thinking about union dollars fought back, won. And I'm thinking about the moment that I saw those dollars come into my account, right? And that was a big moment. That was a huge change. And for me, like, sometimes I can't believe that we pulled that off. And then I talked to some of the members, and I know what some of you spent that on. Some of you spent that on housing deposits. You know? You bought cars with it. You paid off debts. I mean, that money took you out of arrears and into the clear so you could start planning a life into the future. And it's kind of one of the most upsetting... There is something bittersweet about that, though, because it makes you realize what the university has taken from so many of us, right? Which is the capacity to plan into the future. And they've used that to fund a business model that is apparently meant to be saving money for the sustainability of the institution. Money that we never see and that they never seem to spend. But of course, money is not obviously the only measure of success for a union movement, right? There are other things that we want. Obviously, we want dignity of work. And that was something that there was not a lot of, right? Going around the university when we started organizing a few years ago. Nobody wanted to identify as a casual worker. Nobody wants to identify with a class position that they so desperately need to be temporary, right? Because they don't know if they're going to be able to last another semester. And the other hard thing about it too, one of the hard things about organizing casuals is that narrative, right? That narrative of exceptionalism that has allowed the university to get away with murder for so long, because as casuals, we think their failure to provide dignified permanent work is our fault. We carry it as our personal failure. Yeah. No, I don't think so, right? And yeah, exactly. And it's this whole thing, right, that we're standing here right now as a collective, which means that we're not doing that anymore. We're not taking that crap any longer. I mean, obviously, it's like what this means that we're all here is that we stop buying that story, right? The story the university has been selling to us, that we are just contract workers, you know, lucky for the privilege to toil and to toil some more. So we stopped acting like that, right? And started acting like what we are, which is contributors to the intellectual life of this country and a workforce, right? You know, workers who, like all workers, are always stronger when we stand together and demand a future, the future that we deserve for the vital work that we do. And it is vital. So I think that's pretty good. And I think the last thing, I think one of the other things that I think is important about what we've done here and what we will continue to do is that we've changed what the word casual means, I think. At the very beginning of this crisis, our VCs, guys like that guy up there, they were bragging in their boardrooms because they knew that their universities were crisis-proof because they had a workforce that they could shrink or expand at a moment's notice. Yeah, right. Okay, and then a year and a half on, it's like, obviously, that's not what happened. I mean, well, it did, but we didn't let them get away with it, right? And that is a huge achievement. A year and a half, as those campuses went virtual, so did the Casuals Network, and we kept fighting. And now we hear the university is decasualizing, apparently. They're moving towards fixed-term contracts. Not the contracts we want just yet. That's not permanent work, not yet. But it does mean that we've gone and taken what was their get-out-of-jail-free card and turned it into a liability, which is what casual work should be, right? And that is a big win. And I think the last thing I want to say is that it's like where we are in the campaign now, obviously we still have, there's more to do, right? We know that a decasualized university is not necessarily a more just one, just by virtue of that. And so we're going to have to keep the pressure on. But we built the strength to get us this far, right? And now we've got to find it in ourselves to build the strength to finish this. Because it's important for the sector, and it's important for us, and it's important for the union movement. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out.
When I say union, you say power. Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
Make sure Duncan Marskell can hear it. When I say union, you say power. Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
Union!
Power!
Union!